GX on Agriculture with Rod McDonald.
Hey, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to GX on Agriculture. Coming up on the program today, well, I told you yesterday that Richardson International has announced that it's pulling out as a core funder for the Canola Council of Canada, at least as far as the this year, 2018, is concerned. Anyway, they may, in fact, come back into the fold at some later date, but for now, at least, they're pulling funding from the Canola Council of Canada. In response to that, several canola grower organizations, including SAS Canola, are stepping up to the plate and in defense of the Canola Council of Canada. I spoke with Charlene Bradley this morning. She farms in the Rosetown area. She's on the SAS Canola Board of Directors and is the organization's representative on the Canola Council of Canada. And we discussed the situation with Richardson International pulling out. Richardson International indicating they just didn't feel they were getting good value for their investment. They put about $1 million annually into the Canola Council, as well as the Flax Council and Soy Canada. And they're also announcing that they'll discontinue funding for those other organizations as well. So we'll hear from Charlene Bradley, get her take on that story today. Also coming up on GX on Agriculture today, several events in the offing, including the Saskatchewan Ranch Management Forum and the Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference. They're both coming up here in the next few weeks, and we'll find out about those events as well on the program today. First, though, the Agriculture Weather Outlook is a presentation of Yorkton Raymore and Watrous New Holland, and Sean Prahika, your REMAX Blue Chip Ag Division Specialist.
Agriculture Outlook with Precision Weather.
And it's time now for Precision Weather with meteorologist Phil Spivak. We've enjoyed the much warmer weather over the last couple of days here. Maybe not necessarily the slippery conditions that go along with that, but I think we'll take the warmer temperatures and hope it lasts a while, Phil.
Yeah, and it hasn't been too bad. We're not necessarily dealing with, you know, a bright, sunny, warm day, but you don't expect that in January or really any month this time of year. What you expect when you get these warm-ups is what we have. Variable conditions, occasional flurries or rain showers, the occasional breeze picking up, and temperatures this afternoon creeping up to around 3. So we're above freezing. That means we'll get into some melting once again. But tonight it will refreeze. Now tonight the difference is that we don't drop off far. A lot of cloud cover around. It's going to be variable. We're watching right now some breaks in the overcast. A very large area of cloud cover, though. The thickest of the cloud is directly associated with these little weather features along the way, upper-level disturbances, weak surface disturbances. So in between, there are thinner clouds. But there are enough of them around to keep temperatures from dropping off tonight. Also helping is a southwesterly breeze. That will be picking up through the day. Hasn't been overly strong, but into the middle part of the afternoon, it'll start to pick up 20 to 35 kilometers per hour from the west to southwest, and then it stays averaging around 20 tonight. So a bit breezy. Will it feel warm? No. Will it feel brutally cold? No, because when you have temperatures that are above freezing or even just barely below, the winds don't drive the wind chill down that far. 3 degrees again this afternoon, down to -2 tonight. Wind chill likely near -10. Tomorrow, cloud and sunshine with a high near 2. And then the winds turn into the west and northwest. But this is not a blast of cooler air. It is simply a gradual retreat of the warmer air. That's why we're still above freezing tomorrow afternoon. That melting, which stops tonight, starts to get into a bit of a refreeze. But because temperatures don't fall that much, it's not a significant refreeze. More patchy, slick spots. Tomorrow, we get back into some melting near 2. Tomorrow night, we get back down to -5. And from there, we may not get back above freezing. It'll be a close call on Saturday. We'll be around 0. But a couple of flurries Friday night into especially early Saturday. And then on and off flurries for Sunday into Monday as we sort of transition between the warmer pattern and the colder air, which is just not in any hurry to drop southward. We're going to get stuck with a fair amount of cloud cover around, but not much as far as significant precipitation goes. Just a few flurries from time to time. Sunday's high -3, Monday near -9.
All right, thank you, Phil. Now, the temperature roundup. It's -13 in the Paw, -8 in Swan River, -9 in Hudson Bay. -5 this hour in Dauphin. Brandon reports -6. Shoal Lake Russell, -3. Roblin, -4. Regina, -2 degrees. Saskatoon, Broadview Mooseman, Indian Head, -1. Wynyard with Dina and Kelvington, plus one. In the York and Melville region, partly cloudy. The wind is south at 11, relative humidity 76%. Our temperature is warmed 2 degrees in the past hour, now minus 4. Yesterday's high was plus 3, the low minus 13. Our provincial temperature extremes range from a high of 9 at Maple Creek down to minus 25 at Key Lake and Island Falls. In Manitoba, McCreary enjoyed a plus 6. And the Manitoba cold spot, just a second, I left that out. We'll have to keep you guessing on that one. Normals for this date, we'd expect daytime highs around minus 12 or overnight lows near minus 24. Sunrise this morning, 8:45. The sun will set this afternoon at 5:16. And again, our current temperature is minus 4. It's 12:23. You're listening to GX on Agriculture. In the wake of the announcement from Richardson International that it's chosen not to be a core funder of the Canola Council of Canada in 2018, the canola grower members of the Canola Council have issued a joint news release. Winnipeg-based Richardson International has announced it will not provide funding in 2018 for the Canola Council of Canada and the Flax Council of Canada and Soy Canada. Richardson's annual contributions to the organizations were around $1 million annually. Richardson International Senior Vice President of Corporate Affairs Jean-Marc Roux says the company has found the value of membership in the groups has fallen short of the financial cost. In a news release today, Alberta Canola, Sask Canola, the Manitoba Canola Growers, and the Canadian Canola Growers Association say they fully appreciate the value they receive from the Canola Council of Canada for the substantial grower dollars they contribute and will continue to work to move the organization forward. Charlene Bradley farms just west of Rosetown and is on the Sask Canola Board of Directors. She's also Sask Canola's representative on the Canola Council of Canada.
Well, I think the Canola Council of Canada, we all firmly believe that it's a very important part of the industry. It's one of the only organizations in the industry that has representatives from all sectors, the life science, the crushers, the exporters, as well as the producers. So we feel it's a vital piece of the industry, and we do a lot of great things through there.
Bradley says the show of support for the Canola Council is in response to the announcement from Richardson International that it was pulling its core funding for the organization.
Yeah, I guess you could call that a response for sure. It's just we wanted to get out there that our producer groups do support the Canola Council. There was a lot of media around JRI, and we felt that it was important that we reaffirm our position with the Canola Council.
Bradley says she believes the Canola Council provides good value to its funding partners.
I do believe we are getting good value out of it. Certainly the agronomy and the research side is something more near and dear to our producers' hearts. However, I mean, with every organization, you always need to, you know, do a bit of, I wouldn't say necessarily restructuring, but take a look and do your strategic plan again. And so we're in the process of doing that in the year 2018.
Bradley says the agronomy support that the Canola Council provides is one of the reasons the canola industry in Western Canada is so resilient. And she says the international marketing and promotion efforts of the council have also increased the demand for canola and have helped our export partners create and maintain inroads into many international markets.
Certainly we are able to, you know, join our resources together and access research dollars and provide good agronomy, translate that research dollars into the agronomy and deliver that message to the growers in the industry. So I think that is one of the biggest values that the producers will find, as well as certainly addressing the market access issues and market development as well as an important part of it.
Bradley says the grower organizations will continue to work with the Canola Council of Canada to ensure that the services and support that growers want from the council continue in the most efficient manner possible. It's 12:29 now. We have AgriView coming up next.
GX94, AgriView.
Saskatchewan Agriculture's regional crop specialist in the Weyburn District, says it's too early to worry about dry soil and a lack of snow cover in southern Saskatchewan. The region had its driest year since 1885 last year, but Sherry Roberts says she's not concerned yet about the lack of moisture or a lack of snow cover.
If this was the second week in March and we were looking at the kind of low amounts of moisture that we've gotten, I would really start getting a little bit apprehensive. But at this point in time, I've been in Saskatchewan for enough years to know that we can still get a lot of moisture yet.
Saskatchewan Stock Growers President Shane Yonke ranches in the southwest portion of the province and is concerned about the lack of snow. He says pastures need moisture to thrive in the spring. A farmer in the Quill Lakes region has fired back in response to the Saskatchewan Alliance for Water Sustainability's efforts to stop water from the Quill Lakes flowing into Last Mountain Lake. Dwight Odeline says no water from the Quill Lakes would go into the lake, as it would just be drainage water, which has caused massive flooding in the area. Odeline also says another claim from the Alliance is also incorrect.
I've also read statements that there's been no mixing of water bodies for 10,000 years. There's zero data to back that statement up. I've talked to people who say they've seen the water flow, but there was a dam put in the late 50s to redirect the water north towards the Quill Lakes. You can believe these people or not, but I've stood on that dam.
The Saskatchewan Alliance for Water Sustainability has announced plans to gather signatures for a federal e-petition to stop the Quill Lakes Watershed Association from draining water into Last Mountain Lake. Odeline says if such action is taken, it would have devastating effects on the people in the Quill Lakes area. Canadian farm equity topped $500 billion at the end of 2016, up 4.6% from a year earlier. StatsCan reports total farm equity was $500.5 billion as the increase in the value of assets outpaced liabilities. The increase in farm equity was the smallest percentage rise in farm equity in Canada since 2009. Manitoba and Saskatchewan recorded their smallest year-over-year percentage increases in a decade. The largest increase was in Alberta, up 6.8% in 2016. Farm real estate values continued to drive farm asset values, while the 6.7% year-over-year increase in 2016 was the smallest since 2010, real estate's share of total asset value continued to climb. In 2016, more than three-quarters of farm asset value was in real estate, rising from two-thirds in 2007. The total value of Canadian farm inventories of crops, inputs, poultry, and livestock declined 6.7% from 2015 to $45.1 billion. The biggest contributor to that was the value of livestock and poultry inventory, down 15%. Despite a slight decline in prices, crop inventory value increased 2.8% from 2015 to $18.4 billion in 2016. Top palm oil producers Indonesia and Malaysia are criticizing the European Union for backing a ban on the use of palm oil in biofuels. A Malaysian minister is calling the move a protectionist trade barrier and a form of crop apartheid. European lawmakers approved draft measures yesterday to reform the power market there and reduce energy consumption to meet more ambitious climate goals. The plan includes a ban on the use of palm oil in motor fuels beginning in 2021. Indonesia and Malaysia are the world's top two palm oil producing countries, accounting for nearly 90% of global supply. A large portion of European palm oil imports are used to make biofuels, giving the industry's top two producers cause for concern as they fear overall demand will fall. It appears plant breeders have found a loophole to circumvent the EU's laws restricting the use of genetically modified organisms. An advisor to Europe's top court says crops obtained by the plant breeding technique of mutagenesis do not fall under the laws restricting the use of GMOs, but individual EU states can regulate their use. Mutagenesis, which generates a genetic mutation that can occur naturally or be induced, has been around for decades, but advances in the technique have ignited a debate over whether it should face the same EU rules as GMOs, which are often subject to a long process of scrutiny to win approval. Critics say such gene editing has not been proven safe for public health or the environment. European and other seed makers say the process does not involve the transfer of genes between species, as in GMOs, and is a valuable tool to boost yields. Supplies of chicken raised without antibiotics are outstripping demand, according to a major U.S. poultry producer, a sign that overproduction could eat into processors' profits. Large chicken and restaurant companies have raced to cut antibiotics from poultry supplies, as public health experts have warned about the link between the use of the drugs in farms and the rise of drug-resistant bacteria. According to Sanderson, the third largest U.S. poultry producer, antibiotic-free chickens made up an average of 40.5% of all fresh U.S. production for the first 10 months of last year. However, only 6.4% of sales were for products sold as antibiotic-free. And one more thing, a University of Alberta study says a provincial program that uses hunting license fees to compensate ranchers when cows, sheep, or goats are killed by predators also supports conservation efforts. The Predator Compensation Program provides money to ranchers who lose livestock to a bear, cougar, wolf, or eagle. Research published recently in the journal Environmental Management says private ranch land also provides important habitat for wildlife. The study found that because the Predator Compensation Program helps offset the cost of losing animals, ranchers are more willing to maintain that habitat. Welcome back to GX on Agriculture. Time now for the Livestock Market Report. It's a presentation this afternoon of Pattison Agriculture.
Livestock Market Conditions.
Livestock futures up in trading this afternoon. February live cattle, 121.90, up 92 cents. April live cattle, 123.35, that's up 57 cents. March feeder cattle, 147.02, up $1.05. April feeder cattle, 147.27, up 115. February lean hogs, 72.95, up 22 cents. And April lean hogs, 75.85, up 32 cents. And those are the latest U.S. livestock futures. We have the grain prices coming up in about 9 minutes from now at 10 to 1. More research is being done on intercropping, planting and harvesting two crops in the same field. Lana Shaw is manager of the Southeast Research Farm at Redverse, and she's been speaking at a number of producer meetings this winter.
In general, the first thing you want to find is a crop that you can separate easily and that has the same maturity. Most of the time, that's some kind of a brassica with a pea is one of the easiest things to start with. And so we used to call that peola, pea canola, but also pea and mustard, a maple pea and mustard, works really well. So it just depends on what kind of weeds you have, whether you can do that, and how you would go about doing it. But that's one of the easiest ones to start with.
There are a number of issues when it comes to intercropping.
There's a lot of the same equipment can be used, but we're trying to seed two crops at the same time instead of one, harvesting two crops at the same time instead of one, and then having to separate them after the fact. So there are some equipment considerations that might keep people from doing it, and also things like herbicides, they have to be compatible with both. There's rotational concerns where, you know, people aren't sure how to fit this into their rotations that they currently have. So there's a lot of interesting conversation to be had. A lot of the reason is that there's a big knowledge gap. Nobody knows how to do this very well. I'm one of the people that's been working on it for a few years, so I've got some experience. Some producers have some experience, but very few people know where to go to find information.
Now, there will be an intercropping seminar coming up next Wednesday, January 24th, in Regina.
Saskatchewan Agriculture has a seminar just on intercropping, generally on mixed grain intercropping, but also we're going to touch on some cover crops and some of the forage underseeding that also is going on. That's a really exciting event because this is not a subject that's being addressed really anywhere else in North America. So for the last intercrop conference, we had people coming from Pennsylvania, Iowa, North Dakota, Michigan, in order to hear about what we're trying to do here. So this is groundbreaking, cutting-edge stuff.
You can get more information on that intercropping seminar by contacting your Saskatchewan Agriculture Rural Service Center. It's 12:45 now. Western Canadian farmers are looking at additional competition in the pulse crop market. Chuck Penner is with Left Field Commodity Research.
In Russia and Ukraine, and even Eastern European countries like Hungary and Romania, they've been growing more peas, mostly yellow peas, and they're targeting India as well. So they've already seen some big production increases this year. But the big change has been in lentils, actually, is in Kazakhstan. So they've been growing lentils in this last year. The official data showed something like 800,000 acres in Kazakhstan, and they're targeting Middle East, North Africa, those regions with lentils.
Transportation has always been a weak link, but Penner says improvements are being made.
The transportation links from that area into India aren't final yet, but they're working on them. The branches that would come off, if you've heard of the new Silk Road and that type of thing, from China into, you know, all the way into Western Europe, but there are branches that will go off into India and into these other areas. They're not there yet. I think they're still focused on the Middle East and North African markets. That's still their best and the closest market for them for now.
Penner says this, combined with Indian tariffs on pulse imports, illustrates the need for more domestic processing in Western Canada.
There are some really good plants that are being proposed now, and some are already underway and will be starting up soon. So yeah, we just need more of that kind of business. I liken it to the canola market, where we used to depend so much more heavily on exports, and now we have roughly half and half being processed domestically and half being exported. So that would be great if we could get there on pulses as well, too, to balance out that market.
Chuck Penner is with Left Field Commodity Research, based in Calgary. It's 12:47 now. Again, we have the latest grain prices coming up here in about 3 minutes, 10 to 1. CN Rail says grain movement was relatively strong in December, despite the bitter cold. CN's David Shidnovic, director of grain marketing for CN, says grain movement picked up momentum in December after being set back in the fall due to a number of issues, including derailments on the main line in Alberta and BC.
The second and the third week of December were very strong, and we actually recorded the second best week of the crop year in there. In the last week of December, the close of the navigation of the St. Lawrence Seaway effectively ended hopper demand to Thunder Bay until March, and grain companies reduced orders as they worked around the holidays at West Coast export terminals. Now, extreme cold weather also put a lot of stress on the rail network in the tail end of December, and that impacted performance. CN saw its third best ever December for Canadian grain, and tonnage moved was off just 5% versus December 16's all-time record, and it was flat versus the three-year average. That contrasts to U.S. grain being off 10% versus last December, and that was due primarily to a weaker export rail program to the U.S. Gulf. Now, in terms of bulk grain movement in Western Canada, CN averaged around 4,650 hoppers per week in December, compared to around 5,000 per week last December. The three-year average was just under 4,800.
Shidnovic says the Port of Vancouver has seen the best movement ever from CN.
Now, interestingly, since the start of the crop year, CN's seen record unloads at Vancouver. Now, customers use commercial car supply agreements to protect their car supply to Vancouver, and that shows in the numbers. And generally speaking, customers more focused on protecting car supply by using contractual commitments, including the car auction and fleet integration programs, have fared much better this crop year in periods of tight car supply compared to customers relying on general car supply to cover their shipping needs.
David Shidnovic is CN Rail's Director of Grain Marketing.
Commodities Update.
Canola futures are trending up this afternoon. March, $492 a metric ton, up $2.30 from yesterday's close. And May canola, $499.70, up $2.60. March Minneapolis wheat, $6.10 3/4 a bushel, down 1 cent. March Kansas City wheat, $4.29 1/2, up 2.5 cents. March Chicago wheat, $4.24 3/4, up 3 1/4. March corn, $3.51 1/4, down 1 3/4 of a cent. March soybeans, $9.72 1/2. Up 3 3/4. And March oats, $2.60 3/4. That's up 6 1/2 cents this afternoon. And those are the latest grain prices. The Farm Bulletin Board is next.
Farm Bulletin Board.
Parkland College in Yorkton will present a 2-day course next week on grain marketing for women. Parkland College business and training rep Daryl Landles says the course will provide a good introduction to grain marketing. He says the course will run next Tuesday and Wednesday at Parkland College. There are limited spots available. Contact Parkland College for further details. The annual Saskatchewan Ranch Management Forum will be held in Moose Jaw next month. Saskatchewan Agriculture Regional Livestock Specialist Naomi Paley says the forum will run over 3 days, February 9th through the 11th, at Masonic Lodge in Moose Jaw.
This is the third annual one that is put on by the Ministry of Agriculture. So the Ranch Management Forum actually moves around from place to place in the province. So this year it's Moose Jaw's turn, and it welcomes producers from all over the province. We have different topics and speakers that come every year.
Paley says they have a long list of timely topics that will be discussed at the Ranch Management Forum.
We cover everything from soup to nuts, everything from calving management tips to finances and taxes, livestock handling, farm structure, feeding, artificial insemination, you name it, we've got somebody there to speak about it. So it really covers the full gamut of production. It also touches on many forage management topics as well.
Paley says you can register for the Saskatchewan Ranch Management Forum up until the end of the month.
It's a great deal. So for 3 days of information and presentations and tours as well, it's $175, and that includes your meals as well. Registration is pretty simple. You just need to call our Agricultural Knowledge Center in Moose Jaw. It's 1-866-457-2377.
Saskatchewan Agriculture Regional Livestock Specialist Naomi Paley. We'll hear more from her on the Saskatchewan Ranch Management Forum coming up on tomorrow's program. The Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference will be held next Wednesday and Thursday in Saskatoon. Featured speakers include Dr. Joe Schwartz from McGill University, a scientist known for demystifying science and separating sense from nonsense, and Murad El-Khatib, CEO of AGT Foods and the winner of the 2017 World Entrepreneur of the Year Award. There will also be 9 concise research presentations aimed at beef producers. Shannon McCartan is manager of the Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference.
We've got topics that range everywhere from what to grow to feed your cattle, and how to measure your water quality, changing face of producers in agriculture, who are they, who are they going to be, vaccination, role of vitamin E in calf health, reducing the pain of painful procedures, how to precondition your calves. It really covers the full gamut of production.
There will also be a panel discussion called What the Customer Wants. McCartan says the panel will feature local consumers.
We've worked with a market research company to bring in a group of panelists. Far as I know, we don't know any of them. It is going to be the people that are making the buying decisions. That was part of the criteria for their selection. And we'll just walk them through how much protein are they buying and why and what's driving their decisions. We want to hear from the people who are actually buying for their families. What are they buying and why? Is it price-driven? Are they following the media a lot in making their decisions? There's a lot of messaging out there now, positive and negative. We're trying to get to the bottom of what is behind those purchasing decisions.
The Beef Industry Conference will also feature evening programs. Next Wednesday, it'll be the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association scholarship presentation. That will be followed by a live auction in support of that scholarship fund. Then on Thursday night, there will be an awards banquet.
Those awards are from the Saskatchewan Livestock Association, their annual Honor Scroll Awards, and three very deserving couples who are going to be honored on that evening. Janet and the late Dale Blair from Drake, Lori and Garner Diabald from Hodgeville, and Glennis and Brian Whedon from Swift Current. All three very popular names in agriculture in this province.
McCartan says you can register for the Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference at saskbeefconference.com. She says the deadline is tomorrow, but they may make some exceptions.
Yes, strongly encourage pre-registration because it makes sure that you get fed, but we do take walk-ups as well. So if people are at home wondering about the weather or their ability to get away from the herd and they don't decide until the last minute, we won't turn you away.
Again, the Saskatchewan Beef Industry Conference goes next Wednesday and Thursday, January 24th and 25th at the Saskatoon Inn. It's 12:58 now, and we'll close out GX on Agriculture with our precision weather forecast for the Quill Lakes, Hudson Bay, Swan River, Broadview, Mooseman, Indian Head, Yorkton, Melville, Roblin, and Russell regions. Partly to mainly sunny this afternoon. Wind west-southwest, 20 to 35, high 3. A few clouds tonight. Wind west-southwest, 15 to 25. Overnight low, minus 2. Partly sunny tomorrow. Wind west, 15 to 25, high plus 2. Cloudy Saturday, 30% chance of flurries. Wind west-northwest, 10 to 20, high 0. Cloudy with a few flurries Sunday, minus 3. Much the same story on Monday. Few flurries, high near minus 9. On the temperature roundup this hour, minus 13 in the Paw, minus 9 in Hudson Bay. Swan River reports minus 8. Brandon minus 6, Dauphin 5, Roblin minus 4, Shoal Lake Russell minus 3, Regina reports minus 2, Broadview Mooseman, Indian Head minus 1, Saskatoon also minus 1 this hour, and Wynyard, Wadena, and Kelvington plus 1. Yorkton Melville, partly cloudy, the wind is south at 11, relative humidity 76%, our current temperature minus 4 degrees. And that's it for today. Make plans to join us again tomorrow afternoon at 12:15 for GX on Agriculture. I'm Rod McDonald.